This is NHPR News.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. By the official numbers, the Great Recession began in December of 2007 and ended in June 2009. So now, 3 years later, why are we still feeling so uncertain? Despite data showing our economy is technically in recovery, growth seems slow in housing, in business investment, and especially in jobs. Lots of commentators blame political uncertainty, including what's been called the fiscal cliff that our federal budget is said to be approaching as automatic tax hikes and spending cuts go into effect, with predictions of personal hardship for many Americans. Some others point to partisan bickering and their sneaking suspicion that politicians do it so a slow economy will make the other party look bad. Others blame the corporate sector for supposedly sitting on piles of cash instead of expanding and hiring. And still others look abroad at an overall global slump and conclude that these slow growth times could be the new normal. Today in The Exchange, the reluctant recovery, why it's been so tepid, and whether the post-recession booms we used to see are a thing of the past. Let's hear from you. What's your take on why this recovery has been less than impressive? Who do you blame? Politicians, global economic forces, employers, or something else completely outside our control? Let's hear from you now. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org, or post a comment on our Facebook page. We're joined by three business and economics journalists. Joining us from Boston, Andrew Caffrey, assistant business editor for the Boston Globe. And Andrew, nice to have you. Thanks for your time.
Good morning.
Also with us, Peter Coy, economics editor for Bloomberg Businessweek. And Peter, welcome. Thanks for your time as well.
Thank you.
And joining us is Derek Thompson as well, business editor for The Atlantic. And Derek, good morning. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Derek, I want to start with you. I remember doing programs on the economy in the depths of the recession. And boy, every time we would have economists in, we'd say, okay, when are we going to be out of this? Predictions, Derek, were that we would for sure be out of it now. We'd be feeling pretty good by the mid to end of 2012. Why is it taking us so much longer than we expected, Derek, to feel better about this economy?
Well, financial crises in general are always harder to get out of because what you have is a group of households that have a lot of debt who aren't ready to spend. And if you have millions of people who aren't ready to spend, you're not likely to get out of a recession very quickly. But I also want to look at, there's sort of four engines that the U.S. has that we've had trouble sort of getting clicking at the exact same time. So two of those engines are the private sector and the public sector very broadly. In early 2009, we passed the stimulus. We kept federal spending and overall spending at the states at a pretty decent level while the private sector was sort of cratering. And that helped stabilize or at least mitigate the recession, which, as horrible as it was, still, as you mentioned, was technically over in June 2009. But since then, what's happened is that the public sector has entered a free fall, just as the private sector has actually had something of an average recovery. Private sector job creation, remember, in the last 3.5 years, has actually been better than private sector job creation in the 3.5 years of first 3.5 years of George W. Bush's term. So we're not looking at a remarkably weird private sector recovery. But what's happening in government is that we've lost 600,000 jobs in the last 2 years. And that's really helped delay the recovery. The second sort of couplet that's important to look at is manufacturing and housing. In the early part of the recession until very recently, global trade was decently strong compared to past recessions, even though everything else was much worse. So manufacturing was relatively healthy. But recently, manufacturing has slowed down, just as housing, which has had such a rough time with it, has started to bottom out and maybe even come back in some key areas. So overall, I'd say we're just having trouble in an extremely difficult financial crisis to get these all four engines clicking at the exact same time.
Wow. So it's a complicated set of machinery that needs to be working completely and nicely in tandem, Derek. And right now, it's sort of herky-jerky with fits and starts in various pieces, but not all moving on all four cylinders, so to speak.
That's exactly it.
Peter, you know, I'm interested in what Derek says about financial crises. Recessions caused by financial crises are especially hard to get out of. I've read this elsewhere, too. What do you think about that?
Yeah, there's great work by Kenneth Rogoff from Harvard and Carmen Reinhart from, she used to be University of Maryland. Now she's in Peterson Institute in Washington. They have the book that you probably mentioned on your show in the past, This Time is Different, Eight Centuries of Financial Folly. And it makes exactly the point Derek's talking about, that they went back and they looked at financial crises all over the world and found that they are different in kind, not just in degree, from garden variety recessions. And as Derek correctly noted, the problem with a financial crisis is it tends to be rooted in over-indebtedness. So go back to how an ordinary recession happens, just the kind that we have gotten used to. The economy overheats, and so the Federal Reserve says, okay, we're worried about inflation, so what we're going to do is we're going to chill things down. We're going to raise interest rates, make it harder for people and businesses to borrow, and that'll succeed in removing the excess demand from the economy. The economy will cool off, and once that happens, inflation will fall, and the Fed can take its foot off the brake, and things will get going again.
Mm-hmm.
But what we have now is a recession caused by too much debt, where the Fed cannot, definitely has never raised interest rates in the first place. So it did lower them from their sort of moderate level, but there's a floor of zero on interest rates. You can't really have negative interest rates outside of some extremely unusual and narrow circumstances. So that once the Fed lowered interest rates to effectively zero, that is the federal funds rate, the overnight rate on loans between banks got down to 0 to 0.25%, and it's been stuck there, it lost its main recession-fighting tool. And it found that because people were in such deep debt, even these low rates did not entice them to borrow again. So that's when the Fed started going to the unconventional tools like
quantitative easing, bonds. Right? Isn't that what they call it, Peter?
Quantitative easing, QE2, they're talking about QE3 now. Bond buying intended to lower long-term rates, because the only thing the Fed directly controls is the short-term rate. But it wants to influence rates out in the longer term, the ones that affect mortgage rates, for example. It wants to get mortgage rates down, figuring if they can spark housing, then maybe the economy can get going again. And that has not worked very well so far.
So there's another lever that is normally used to boost the economy after a recession. And you're saying, Peter, this lever of the Federal Reserve playing with interest rates, it's pretty powerless this time. People have so much debt.
It's kind of broken.
Yeah.
The old pushing on a string problem.
They're not going to borrow even if interest rates are practically zero because they're too indebted already. You know, Andrew Caffey...
Right, and they don't have enough confidence about the economy growing, about the future of their own jobs. If you're worried about losing your job or you don't have one in the first place, you're not about to go out and buy a house.
Yeah, well, that elusive confidence factor we should return to. But, Andrew, I want to get you into this, too. What's your take, given, you know, your position as business editor at the Boston Globe? You're talking to business people. You're talking to economists. What's your take on why it has taken us, I was going to say so long. I mean, we thought we'd all be feeling great by now, 3 years after the recession ended, right?
Yes. I mean, as the others have said, there's a huge psychological issue that always is associated with sort of group activities such as economic spending. And I think, you know, we're all kind of walking around in a bit of a funk, not knowing where things are going. So we have this sort of self-feeding attitude that says, you know, well, if I'm not really sure that business is going to pick up, I'm not going to hire more employees and, you know, invest back into my business. And that, you know, that has, you know, obviously a rippling effect throughout the economy. You know, fewer people have new jobs and the income with which to spend as it goes, you know, down into the consumer level. And so we're all kind of walking around, I think, in this sort of confusion and funk about where we're going. And I think, you know, there's a lot to be said about sort of the overall psychological climate that sustains this kind of attitude. But I also think there's obviously some very real concerns that are, I think, pretty particular to New England about why we're not growing faster and why we're not seeing, in particular, more investment decisions being made at this time. The two most obvious that I can see are the issues with Europe. We do a fair amount of trade with Europe or dependency on interaction with European economies. And if you don't know if people in Europe can pay their bills, much less order new widgets from your factory, that's a pretty, you know, clear signal that you're not going to take major investment steps that would benefit your own local economy. And separately, you know, we have our own issue with the U.S. government, the so-called fiscal cliff. And I think I'd like to point out in particular that New England, you know, is a very dependent on defense contracts, whether it's the BAE systems in New Hampshire, Raytheon in Massachusetts along the New Hampshire border. We have the Bath Iron Shipworks up in Maine. And if, you know, as I think the Pentagon has called the potential cuts to the budget, that if the automatic spending cuts went into effect, apocalyptic. You know, the fact is that a large portion of our economy is dependent on defense contracts, and it's very hard, I think, for these defense contractors to not react in anticipation of something bad happening, because there's not a whole lot of great signals coming out of Washington that a better solution is nearer at hand. And so you have both a psychological and a very real kind of material event against which people are making a plan. And those are two pretty, you know, powerful kind of molasses-like forces that I think are glopping the works at businesses, whether they're a small machine shop that refines parts for the aviation industry or a large electronics manufacturer that services, you know, radar installations.
All right, and lots to follow up on, gentlemen, after a short break. I'm interested in this funk that Andrew talks about, whether the funk is justified. Also, the political aspects that you mentioned, Andrew, that have been mentioned by others, the fiscal cliff for the federal budget and so forth. So we'll pick up on all those threads after a short break. We'll take your calls, too. You can join us at 1-800-892-6477 or send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, and we'll be right back.
Really interesting conversation that we're listening to today on the economic recovery, the reluctant recovery. As it were, I'm Abby Goldstein. I'm here with Sarah Ashworth, our news director, and we are inviting you to make a good economic decision in supporting your favorite public radio station, New Hampshire Public Radio, by getting involved in our summer car raffle. We'll be back to this discussion with the exchange in just a couple of minutes. Right now, your chance to support this station that brings you discussions like this, 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org.
It's your chance to support programs like The Exchange, but it's also your chance to win some really great prizes. The grand prize, of course, in our summer car raffle is a car. It's a hybrid car. You can choose either a Ford Fusion or a Toyota Prius, donated in part by Groponi Automotive Group. Our second prize is a Trek 7100 bike in Yakima Roof Rack, donated by S&W Sports in Concord. And the third prize is a Manitou Neki kayak, donated by Portsmouth Kayak Adventures. Three great prizes, but you have to buy a ticket to be entered to win one of those. The way you do that is by calling 1-888-805-6477 or going online to nhpr.org.
And you know that you really don't have time to put this off, right? So the deadline to enter our car raffle is this Saturday at noon, just 3 days away. So we don't want you to wait until the very last possible minute. You don't really have time to say, I'll get to it later, because later is almost too late. So while you're thinking about it, while you're listening, while you're riveted by this conversation, make a quick phone call to 1-888-805-6477 or go online, nhpr.org, and buy your raffle tickets before the deadline rolls around. Do it today.
And we'll get back to the exchange here in just a minute or so. And this is an example of one of the ways that the exchange really connects with listeners and really brings you important programming. Today they're talking about the economic recovery. This is an issue that NHPR and NPR and other programs have been following since the recession first began. This is the kind of programming that you've come to rely on from NHPR. This is the kind of intelligent discussion that the exchange is known for and has made part of its brand. And it's also the chance for you to weigh in on some of the most important issues in the world, in the country, and right here in New Hampshire. The exchange brings it to you every day, and you can help support that program by calling and buying your $50 raffle ticket today. You pick up the phone and dial 1-888-805-6477.
It makes very good economic sense when you think about it, because you're giving $100 or $150 to support this service so that we can continue to produce the programs that you love. And if you win the car, the grand prize, you will be cutting down on your own economic impact by driving a hybrid car, which costs a whole lot less to fill up at the gas pump. Plus, you know, that hybrid car has a positive impact on the environment. So by donating and winning, it's coming back to you. It will all come back to you. So make that call right now and get entered to win one of these prizes. 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org.
Our car raffle is a little different from our usual pledge drives. It's not a week or a week and a half long. We just take a couple of days to remind you about these great prizes. And it, you know, with the shorter time frame, it does mean that you have less time to put off buying a ticket. So Saturday at noon is going to be upon us really soon. It's just coming up, and especially during the summer, it gets very busy this time of year. Take a minute now and buy the ticket this morning. For $50, you'll be entered to win one of these great prizes. The number to call is 1-888-805-6477.
Yeah, the clock is ticking. I mean, the early bird part of our raffle came and went, and you might have been busy, maybe you're out of town, but you're back now, and now you have a chance to still get entered to win the grand prizes. So make that call right now and know that you are doing your part for $50 or $100 or $150 to support the programs here on New Hampshire Public Radio. The Exchange, our flagship program, news and public affairs discussions that are so important. Make that call, make that gift, and support New Hampshire Public Radio. And thank you.
More on the reluctant recovery coming up on The Exchange on NHPR. New Hampshire weather for today, mostly cloudy, scattered showers and thunderstorms. Today's highs 77 to 82 degrees. Tonight, cloudy, some scattered showers and thunderstorms, lows from upper 50s to mid-60s. Tomorrow, showers ending in the morning, some breaks of sunshine in the afternoon, highs 75 to 80 degrees. Partly sunny on Friday, highs 82, 85 degrees. And on Saturday, mostly sunny, highs from 80 from the White Mountains north and along the seacoast, ranging to around 90 degrees in the rest of the state. Support for NHPR comes from UR members, and support also comes to us from Lakes Region Community College, offering real-world skills in high-demand fields like energy services, fire science, automotive and marine technology, IT, and more. LRCC.edu. And the Telegraph, innovative local news coverage and advertising opportunities for today's complexities, online at NashuaTelegraph.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, the reluctant recovery, why economic growth remains slow, what it might take to perk it up. We invite you to join us at 1-800-892-6477. Why do you think this recovery has been, well, rather unimpressive? What's your take on the forces behind this? Is it political uncertainty? Is it global economic forces? Is it the corporate sector? Or is it something else outside of our control? Our number here is 1-800-892-6477. Join us, or you can email us at exchange@nhpr.org. Or post a comment on our Facebook page. We have three business and economics editors with us this hour. Andrew Caffrey is with the Boston Globe. Peter Coy is with Bloomberg Businessweek. And Derek Thompson is with The Atlantic. And gentlemen, let's bring our callers into this conversation now. And Otis is waiting in Manchester. Hey, Otis, thanks for hanging on. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was just thinking that I feel the technology has sort of reached sort of a local pinnacle where our productivity is very, very high, right at the same time that we're basically having too few jobs for the number of people, and we're sort of driving the whole employment sector down through our use of really efficient technology.
So, yeah.
I think this is helping to create the concentration of wealth at the top and drive down wages and all that happiness.
You know, Otis, this is something that people have written and talked about for a long, long time. Derek Thompson, the idea that at some point technology will start to replace humans and there won't be enough jobs. What do you think about Otis's point?
It's absolutely true that technology can replace people, and it has for a very, very long time. Let's go back 100 years. In 1900, 40% of Americans were employed on farms. Now it's about 1% to 2%. In 1950, 40% of Americans worked in the manufacturing sector. Now it's closer to 10%. The reason that those percentages fell isn't that we're making less food or that we need fewer toasters. We're making much more toasters and much more food than we were 50 and 100 years ago, but we've become much more efficient at it. Productivity has exploded in those sectors, and we've moved workers into other places. Where have we moved them? Well, in the last 30 years, a lot of them have gone into retail, which is actually having its own sort of productivity revolution. We've seen retail employment flatline very recently, and a lot of them are also going into local service-based industries. They're not just becoming hairdressers, but they're being employed in education and healthcare, and education and healthcare and local services have grown faster than other sectors of the economy that have seen more productivity. So the trend is absolutely there. But it's also the case that productivity shouldn't be a death knell. Productivity makes us richer. It makes the things that we want cheaper. It makes them more efficient to make. And with the slack, with the people and the resources left over, we can invest in other departments of, you know, human happiness, things that you know, delight us and that we want to buy. So it's not necessarily the case that technology is our enemy. But, of course, there are growing pains, and we might be in the middle of one.
Right. Well, Otis, thank you for the call. And again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And, guys, I want to return to a point that Andrew made before the break. He said, we're all walking around in a funk. We're not sure about our prospects, so we're unwilling to make investments or for business owners to hire. Peter Coy, to you, what do you think about that idea of a funk, and is it justified? Are we, you know, more depressed about the economy than we should be?
A couple weeks ago, I was in Washington interviewing Alan Greenspan, former chairman of the Federal Reserve, the special interview issue of Bloomberg Businessweek on newsstands now. and he said that. He made that point. He said that he's done some regression analyses. He's still a working economist, even at age 85 or 86. And he said that he found that the sector of the economy that's weakest is investment in long-term assets. Now, housing is obviously a long-term asset. He's referring to things that are expected to last 20 years or more. So in addition to housing, that would include factories, you know, mostly structures of one kind. And he said to him, the shortfall in that is evidence that both people and businesses worried about their long-term prospects. They may be willing to hire a new worker if they have current demand just to satisfy the they may even be willing to invest in software that's needed right away. But if it's something that's going to be needed for a long time, they are going to be much, much more cautious about it. So he definitely buys into the argument that people are walking around in a funk. And I guess I do, too, to some degree. You get into the issue of why, that's a separate question. But
or is it justified?
Degree, there's a lack of confidence, and that's an important problem.
Yeah, so Peter, real quick, and then I want to hear from you, too, Andrew. But is the funk justified?
I would say it's people are overly funky or whatever the right word is. I don't think it's entirely justified. You know, every slump comes to an end. There's a great story about the CEO of Montgomery Wards, who was famously anti-New Deal. And all through the 1930s, he fought FDR over the New Deal. And then along came World War II, and there was a big bump, of course, in the economy. A lot of people were put to work.
Sure.
But he was convinced that as soon as the war ended and the war spending ended, that we'd slump right back into another extension of the Great Depression. Therefore, he did not invest. His competitors did invest, Sears Roebuck and so on. The result was that Montgomery Ward, which had been the number one retailer in America, fell off its throne and really never recovered. So businesses that are husbanding their cash, sitting on that mountain of cash you referred to earlier, may look really smart right now, but if they're not investing for the next upturn, they could regret that decision later.
Interesting. Well, and Andrew, to you too, you know, maybe New Hampshire's in a better situation than most states, but when I go to a restaurant, you know, there are plenty of other people there. I'm not the only person in the restaurant. I ran some errands this past weekend. There were lots of other shoppers in the parking lot besides me. So, you know, it doesn't seem like things are completely as slow and sluggish as people say they are. What do you think, Andrew?
Well, at the risk of contradicting myself for that.
And your funk comment earlier.
There are sort of multiple bipolar expressions of the economy found around all over New England, and I think actually down here in Boston it may be the most appropriate example. If you go into Boston, if you read the business section of the Globe for the last 6 or 8 months, you would actually question what recession. The amount of and these are sort of like large islands of economic activity that are really abloom here in Boston. We're getting an awful lot of long-term commercial investment in downtown Boston, in particular what's called our Seaport District, the extension of the Boston waterfront out toward and through into South Boston. We've reported numerous big, expensive land transactions, as well as launches of large building construction. We have a lot of big leases that have been signed at, you know, very premium Class A rent, as much as $90 a square foot.
So things look good from that aspect.
Yes, and I was in downtown Boston over the weekend. It was hot and sultry in the middle of summer, and it was okay busy, a fair number of Europeans, not as probably as many as that I would have expected, but it was, you know, the city was abuzz. We have a lot of long-term investment being made by biotechnology companies, particularly on their research end as opposed to, you know, sales channel, distribution channel. Those are significant long-term investments. We had the CEO of State Street Corporation in the other day, you know, a gigantic business with 12,000 employees around the region. They're building $225 million office complex down on the waterfront. That was a big long-term decision on their part. I think it's pretty, you know, you see a lot of fancy restaurants that are busy. I think it's actually pretty easy to find this kind of hopscotch pattern of great economic activity. Our technology sector in Massachusetts, the people who make the tools that increase productivity are doing very well. And then you could go out into the suburbs to the office parks and you could roll a bowling ball down the main access road and not hit anything.
Really? So
you know, you have
open
a real
office space, yeah.
Yes, you have like a real bipolar all over the place, not just one example of this, but you know, so you could be in Boston and not think that there is really anything amiss, and actually things are kind of cooking along, and you could drive 20 miles in a particular direction and, you know, wonder where everybody went.
All right, let's take some more calls, gentlemen. And again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Waiting in Putney, Vermont is Dean. Hi, Dean. Thanks for waiting on the air. You're with us. Go ahead.
Thank you, Laura. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
One of your commentators earlier mentioned that how the private sector was doing fine, but the government was in the toilet. It reminded me, in 2008, I was with a friend of the family who was a retired CEO, And he said to me, well, don't worry, you know, Romney will be president in 2012. And basically the implication was that the Republicans threw the election by pulling in Palin, because they knew that if they won and the rich were attacked again, the people would probably be in the streets by 2009. So I wondered if there's any comment, because his last comment to me was, well, don't you understand, Dean, sometimes you have to lose to win?
Okay. Well, political theories abound. And Derek Thompson, what do you think? People blaming politicians, political shenanigans. I've heard some Democrats say that that the private sector isn't hiring because they want Obama to look bad. What do you think about this? Is this going too far or what?
You know, I don't know too many business people to make a statistically relevant statement here. But it seems to me that it's unlikely that a lot of people who could make money by hiring somebody or by investing long-term or short-term would decide not to because they want to punish the president, especially given the fact that it's such a close race and there's no guarantee that it would work. The idea that the private sector is you know, quote, doing fine is something that's been sort of bandied about and talked about because the president said it. And, you know, doing fine, I guess, is a relative term. The you know, private sector job creation has been better in the last 3 years than it was for the first 3 years with Bush. This is the third of three consecutive so-called jobless recoveries. And there's a reason to expect that that we might not see you know, job full recoveries for quite some time. And you know, one of the reasons for this, you know, it, like Peter mentioned earlier, is that in the 70s and 80s, the recessions weren't caused as they were this time by a debt overhang. They were caused by the Federal Reserve bringing up rates, then putting them down, which led to the specific timing of the recession. I would also point out, you know, to tell the longer story that, you know, the middle class has had a very rough, not just 3 years, but 10 years, 20 years, maybe even 30. And that middle class income has failed to keep up with a lot of important bits of spending, especially education and healthcare, and that leading to some of this, you know, lugubriousness is a sense that the essentials in our life, like energy, housing, education, healthcare, are getting expensive faster than our ability to pay for them if you're in the middle class. And that's something to worry about. And I think both Republicans and Democrats are worried about it. They just have very different answers for the common problem.
Well, Dean, thanks a lot for joining us. And after a short break, we'll take more of your questions and comments. So keep it right here.
My name is Ruth Smith, and I live in Canterbury, New Hampshire. We love The Exchange. Laura Kanoi is just fabulous. She has a way of really bringing out questions and making the guests answer to her questions, which are probably questions we'd like to be asking. And if they're not, we get to call in and ask our own questions and make our own statements. I've called in many times, and it's always, it feels like it's, you know, it's a really local program. And that's one of the things we love about NHPR as well, is that it's not just national news. It's really the local things that matter here in New Hampshire.
I bet you've thought a lot of those same things that Ruth Smith just articulated, because we know you're tuned in, you listen to The Exchange every day. Hello and welcome to NHPR's Summer Car Raffle. I'm Sarah Ashworth here with Abby Goldstein, and this is your chance to support NHPR and its programs like The Exchange, and also have a chance to be entered in a raffle to win some really great prizes. And the way you can do that is by buying a $50 raffle ticket. You can call 1-888-805-6477, or you can buy your ticket online at nhpr.org.
And we'll be back to this really interesting conversation about the recovery in just a couple of minutes. Right now, we want to remind you about our prizes. Our grand prize is a brand new hybrid car. You can choose either a Ford Fusion or a Toyota Prius, donated in part by Grapponi Automotive Group. Tickets are $50 each. So think of it this way. You buy $100, a couple of raffle tickets. For $100, you get a brand new car, $25,000 car. I mean, that is an amazing return on an investment, and it gives you a chance to upgrade to a new car. Maybe you've been saving to buy a new car, and this is a great opportunity to take those savings and reinvest them elsewhere. 1-888-805-6477 or go online, nhpr.org, and get your name in the running.
The deadline is coming up quickly. It's Saturday at noon, and when you call to get your raffle tickets, we do require you to pay by credit card. That's because we're going to pull the winning name this weekend, which means that there isn't time to work through the mail or to send you a reminder or to have a check come in the mail. So we do need you to pay by a credit card today. So when you call, please have it ready. Here's some other rules and regulations that go along with it. You must be 18 years old. You cannot be employed by NHPR or related to any NHPR employee. And you must have an address in New Hampshire, Vermont, or Massachusetts. You can read all these rules and regs online right now at nhpr.org, where you can also buy your raffle ticket. Go to nhpr.org or call 1-888-805-6477.
And the money that you spend on raffle tickets here at New Hampshire Public Radio will go back into, reinvested into the programming that you're listening to, like The Exchange. Today's really fascinating conversation on the recovery. We've got a lot of political coverage planned leading up to the election. We had Ovid LaMontagne, gubernatorial candidate, on yesterday. Maggie Hassan, another gubernatorial candidate, on a couple of weeks ago. We've got most of the other candidates scheduled to come in and spend an hour talking to you about why they want to run for office. We'll have debates for political office later in September. They'll be live at 9 a.m. With the leading candidates for these offices. We'll be doing primary night coverage. All of these things that you help cover the cost of when you buy a raffle ticket. So you're kind of paying it forward. 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org.
For the last couple of weeks, as we've been hearing about the summer car raffle, you've heard from some of the winners of some of the big prizes, including the hybrid car over the last couple of weeks. And all of these winners, they all have something in common. They are listeners just like you who love NHPR and wanted to do their part to support it. It wasn't the prize, that chance to win the car, a bike, or a kayak, as great as those prizes are. It wasn't that compelled them to buy those tickets. It was the great programs, just like The Exchange, that they enjoy every day and that inspire them to show their support. So we're asking you to do the same thing today. Call and buy your $50 raffle ticket at 1-888-805-6477, or you can buy it online anytime at nhpr.org.
It is important to remember that time is running out. The deadline is Saturday at noon for this year's car raffle. So make sure you get your name, you get your tickets now while you're thinking about it, and then you could hear your name announced as the winner. 1-888-805-6477.
More on the reluctant recovery coming up on The Exchange on NHPR, then at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show, Understanding Paul Ryan's Budget Plan. New Hampshire weather for today, mostly cloudy, scattered showers and thunderstorms, highs 77 to 82 degrees. Tonight, cloudy, some scattered showers and thunderstorms, lows tonight upper 50s to mid 60s. For tomorrow, showers ending in the morning, some breaks of sunshine in the afternoon, highs 75 to 80. It'll be partly sunny on Friday with high temperatures 80 to 85 degrees. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from New Hampshire Humanities Council, presenting a folktale festival this Friday, celebrating the release of their English Napoli picture book, The Story of a Pumpkin, nhhc.org. And from the law firm of Donahue Tucker and Chondella, offering legal representation to New Hampshire businesses, individuals, and municipalities, online at dtclawyers.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, a panel of business and economics editors joins us looking at why this recovery feels so uninspiring 3 years after it officially began. Give us a call. Tell us what you think. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Why do you think we are still in a period of slow growth? Who do you think or what do you think might be the cause behind this? Join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Our editors are Andrew Caffrey with the Boston Globe, Peter Coy with Bloomberg Businessweek, and Derek Thompson with The Atlantic. And gentlemen, back to our callers. And Horace is waiting in Henniker. Hi, Horace. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you, Laura.
Sure.
My question was one I'd like to have comment on as far as it seems that there's been an unrealistic expectation in our culture here in America that the American economic engine would continue to fire on all cylinders ad infinitum. And obviously that isn't the case. And historically, you know, we've had ups and downs to begin with. Considering that our economy for the last 30 or 40 years, or even longer, has been fueled by military spending, i.e. the government, you know, by large parts, you know, that's where most of our money has come from as far as the as far as jobs are concerned. And now that has started to fizzle down, and rightly so.
So but, unrealistic expectations, Horace. That's what you're saying.
Unrealistic expectations of the common person to think that those jobs would always be there.
Yeah, you know, this is a great point. Peter Coy, how about you first? Are we just expecting that boom times are a part of our natural state?
You know, if you look at the economy, jobs in particular, from the very bottom of the recession in early 2009 to now, and you chart it against the past two recoveries, the one at the beginning of the 2000s, and the one at the beginning of the 1990s, it looks pretty normal, actually. It doesn't look any worse. What makes it feel so bad is that the decline was far, far worse this time than it was in those previous two recessions. So think about falling down a well. If the well is very shallow, 10 feet deep, and you climb out gradually, you'll get out pretty soon. If the well you fell down into is 100 feet deep, you're going to, even after climbing out for a while, you're still going to be pretty deep in, and that's really where we are right now. So a recovery, yes, slow, but the previous two were slow as well, marked most of all by being in a deep hole. We lost almost 9 million jobs between the peak of employment at the end of 2007 and then nadir in 2009. We've gained back about 4 since then.
Wow, so still a ways to go.
4 million jobs gained since the beginning of 2009. I know if you're Barack Obama, you're touting that number, but it doesn't feel good. He doesn't want to go too far in bragging about the job creation because he knows that he still has a huge unemployment problem on his hands. This is the longest stretch of 8% unemployment since record-keeping began in 1948.
Well, and it's a great point that Horace brings up, but makes me wonder, and I think I'll ask you, Derek Thompson, so is this sort of slow growth, these jobless recoveries, or not as job-full recoveries as we'd like, is this the new normal, Derek?
Well, it certainly could be. This is a stat that actually might shine some light on the question. For whatever reason, inspired to talk about car buying right now. And also we've talked a bit about housing. If you look at cars and houses have typically helped to drive recoveries, no pun intended. They do help to accelerate recoveries because they're big purchases. They're among the most expensive things that a family is going to buy. It's hard to drive a similar recovery simply buying bread and lettuce. And if you go back to the 1970s, car and home sales accounted for somewhere between 40 and 50% of the recovery. In 1980, car and house sales accounted for 30% of the recovery. Today, it's 10%. So one thing that you're seeing, and this goes back to the idea of funkiness and Peter's interview with Greenspan, this fear of taking out debt in order to pay for expensive things that are going to last a long time. The share of the recovery paid for by car and housing sales has dropped from half the recovery to a third to a tenth from the 1970s to the 80s to today. And this is really important. It means that the American consumer is nervous and over-indebted, and as a result, it suggests that as consumption stays flat, inflation and wage growth and job growth will similarly be flattish.
Horace, thanks a lot for the call. And here's another question related to this idea of whether we're experiencing the new normal or not. And Andrew, I want to know what you think first. It's often said that we're in a global economy today, and that one of you mentioned earlier, global slowdown affects the United States. But if, Andrew, would it be possible for the U.S. economy to grow like gangbusters, even if the rest of the world were slumping? Or are we just, you know, tied to the rest of the world no matter what?
Well, there. I mean, it's sort of yes to both in a bizarre way. We can grow, I think, faster than the rest of the world, but only so much and or for so long. And I think it's probably reasonable to expect that relative to Europe, we're going to outperform for a while, unless we descended the kind of political seizure that appears to have afflicted Europe's decision makers, given their own financial situation. I think, you know, there is just a little bit too much intertwining among the various world economies for the U.S. to outperform in any measurable way over any longer period of time. But we're a very heavily consumption-based economy, and that means that we suck in goods and other products from other economies, which is why China has historically done so well in the past 10 or 15 years. And so, you know, to the degree that we would resume consumption spending, it's sort of the reverse of the statistics that Derek mentioned, but we could do better. I mean, there is a tremendously fascinating push-pull going on right now in sort of the American household, the American corporation, the American psyche, which is that, you know, we got out of the 2000 stock market crash, subsequent recession, through an immense housing boom that later turned out to be a fairly false one through the subprime mortgage crisis. But housing purchases and refinancing sustained the American economy after that great stock market debacle during that period. But right now, we're not buying houses or washing machines for those new houses and the like in any way the way we were a decade ago. Right now, the savings rate among American households and American corporations has increased radically. Now, that's a very logical conclusion to what has happened in the last 10 years.
Sure, people aren't buying things.
The direct corollary to that, yes, is that we're not spending that money.
The paradox of thrift, they call it, Andrew, right?
Yes, but we're fixing our household, right? We're going to, that eventually is going to put us in much better condition and improve our psyche if we have a larger savings account. If at some point that balance exceeds the, you know, the psychological threshold that we feel is our comfort zone. So, you know, there's this push-pull. On the one hand, we're all kind of in a funk and we're frozen in the headlights and we're not spending, so the economy isn't moving. But on the other hand, what we're not doing is also improving our own financial condition, you know, something that has been a raging sore for the American economy for a long time.
So getting back to this issue of debt that we started talking about this
and
hour.
The fact that we're just not good savers and the like. And so, well, I think that's going to be a fascinating interplay in the coming years about how, you know, that push and pull between the two forces.
Well, and gentlemen, we have to close it out at that, and we've sort of come full circle in our conversation. And I want to thank all of you very much for being with us. Andrew Caffrey, thank you for being with us this hour.
Most welcome, Laura.
Andrew Caffrey's with the Boston Globe. Peter Coy, thank you for taking the time out as well. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Peter Coy's with Bloomberg Business Week. And Derek Thompson, thanks for your time as well.
Thank you.
Derek Thompson, business editor at The Atlantic. Let's check in now with NHPR's summer car raffle.
Hello and welcome to NHPR Summer Car Raffle. I'm Sarah Ashworth here with Abby Goldstein, and this is your chance to support NHPR and get entered to win some great prizes. This is the finale. There are just a few days left for you to enter our Summer Car Raffle. You can buy your ticket today by calling 1-888-805-6477 or buying it online at nhpr.org.
It's very easy to get entered during NHPR Summer Car Raffle. You call the number 1-888-805-6477. You talk to one of our volunteers. We'll need your name, your address, your phone number. We'll take down your credit card information for as many tickets as you'd like. They're $50 each. Of course, you can do it all online at nhpr.org. You can come by the station with a credit card. We're at 2 Pillsbury Street in Concord. If you're in the area, stop by. You can get in on the raffle, and you can see all the rules and regulations at nhpr.org. It's easy. Nothing could be easier. Make that call right now, 1-888-805-6477.
Or buy your ticket online at nhpr.org. There are only a few days left of our summer raffle. You only have until noon on Saturday to put your name in the hat for the car, the bike, or the kayak. Raffle tickets are just $50 a piece, so if you're the winner, that's a pretty good return on your investment. It takes just a couple of minutes, about 3 minutes on the phone with one of our volunteers to buy your ticket today, or you can buy it at any time at nhpr.org. The number to call is 1-888-805-6477.
And you know, really what you're doing there when you buy raffle tickets, you're getting in to win prizes, which is all great and fantastic, and we're pulling for you. But you're supporting New Hampshire Public Radio. This is a unique service. It is donor-supported. About 40% of the money necessary to run this place comes from voluntary contributions from listeners, from individuals, people just like you. The summer raffle is one way that you help cover the cost of bringing you the news and the programs that you love, that you rely on every day. This is your chance to show the love, share the love. Tell us you appreciate New Hampshire Public Radio by getting your name in the running to win a great prize. 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org.
Show your love to public radio and also maybe win one of these great prizes. You have three chances that come along with your $50 raffle ticket. You could buy, you could win the grand prize, which is a hybrid car. You can choose either a Ford Fusion or a Toyota Prius. The second prize is a Trek 7100 bike. That comes with a Yakima roof rack as well. And third prize is a Manitouneki kayak donated by Portsmouth Kayak Adventures. With your $50 raffle ticket, you have three chances to win one of those great prizes. To buy your ticket, you can go online to nhpr.org or you can call and talk to one